Hello and welcome to The Fruit of Knowledge, a podcast where we talk about scholarship, history, Bible, and religion, because you deserve to make educated choices and understand the world around you with as much accurate information as possible. I'm Alexis, a PhD student in Bible and your podcast host. I hope to bring not only my own experience, but my knowledge of scholarly expertise on these kinds of topics to this broader conversation. In the future, I'd like to explore some of the ideas raised in this quick episode, and I'd very much like to bring knowledge and context from biblical studies to bear on important contemporary topics. I have been trained and work primarily on the ancient world, but I've also done extensive research on the modern world as it interacts with or can be understood through critical biblical studies. I hope to cover more core biblical studies topics such as biblical literalism, Bible translations, so-called biblical laws, the Bible and women, and biblical literature in the context of the ancient Near East, as well as to carefully speak about more modern topics such as the Christian patriarchy movement, fundamentalist influencers, young earth creationism, and more broadly fundamentalist and evangelical history. All of this especially as it relates to scriptural readings, and also especially to gender, as feminist criticism is one of the foci of my work. Let me know if you have any questions or want to know more about anything specific. Today I want to do some introductions and explanations of terms and concepts important for discussions of biblical studies, which will be helpful going forward. This will be a bit crammed full of information, but also relatively short. And you can always come back and consult this episode if that's helpful for you later on. First, let's start with the term Hebrew Bible. The Hebrew Bible, for the purposes of this podcast, is a collection of texts from the first millennium BCE, before Common Era, from Israelite and Judean authors. The specific texts considered canonical in the Hebrew Bible vary depending on the religious group being discussed, as does the arrangement of the texts. The Jewish Bible is organized into three main categories. First, the Torah, which is the first five books, sometimes called by religious individuals the books of Moses due to his canonical, that is, religiously accepted by many, authorship, or by scholars, the Pentateuch. Second, the Nevi'im, the prophets, the prophetic texts. And third, the Ketuvim, the writings, which is everything else. This combination of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim makes up the word Tanakh, which is what the Hebrew Bible is called by many Jewish people. Christian, Protestant, Catholic, and Orthodox Bibles are ordered and grouped differently. And the non-Protestant ones actually have more texts in them than the Tanakh does, with the specific text depending on the branch or sect or church. The Hebrew Bible is written almost entirely in Hebrew, a Northwest Semitic language that was spoken and written in the Levant by Israelites and Judeans, and a few later chapters of the Hebrew Bible are actually written in Aramaic, which is a different but closely related Northwest Semitic language that would become the lingua franca in this part of the world, spoken and written widely still in the Hellenistic and Roman period in these geographical areas. A version of Aramaic would have been the language that the historical Jesus and his contemporaries, as Hellenistic Jews, would have spoken. The Christian New Testament is a collection of texts written in Koine Greek during the first couple of centuries CE, Common Era, from different authors, possibly from around the Mediterranean and the Levant. The canon of New Testament texts took time to be argued into existence as we have it. There have been disagreements on what text should be considered canonical by Christians over time. Revelation has been a particularly controversial text, which is especially interesting because of the prominent role this text plays in the modern Protestant imagination. It's important to note that a number of texts considered scripture by various Judean, Jewish, and Christian communities in the past are not necessarily considered canonical by most communities today, such as the Book of Jubilees, works found at Qumran, the Acts of Paul and Thecla, the Gospel of Thomas. The canon has varied and still does depending on the time, the place, and the specific readers. So, how have these ancient text collections been passed down to us today? We have many manuscript fragments from the Tanakh and from the New Testament, and a few fuller manuscripts of each. Let's start with the Tanakh. Us Hebrew Bible scholars are forever indebted to the Masoretes, a group of Levantine Jewish scholars from the late antique and early medieval period, who bring us the main Hebrew text we now use and that we call the Masoretic Text. If you open up a Hebrew Bible today, such as the scholarly Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia, BHS, or equally scholarly but less formatted Biblia Hebraica Leningradensia, BHL, the text you see would be the Masoretic Text. We have two main Masoretic manuscripts, the Aleppo Codex and the Leningrad Codex, which you can actually look up pictures of online. If you look up these manuscripts online, there's a few basic things you need to know about the scrolls, not codices or bound books, those are later, and in different traditions, that you will see. Firstly, Hebrew is written right to left. Turn your BHS the other way. Secondly, the script you see is called square script, which is actually the later alphabet used to write Hebrew and Aramaic. The Paleo-Hebrew alphabet is what we find in earlier inscriptions and documents. Thirdly, the Masoretes have gifted us a vowel and accentuation system with the consonants of these texts that may or may not be historically accurate, but seem to reflect the reading practices, the pronunciation and cantillation of their, the Masoretic, communities. These cantillation marks are still used by Jewish communities today, and scholars often utilize the vocal system as a baseline, although we don't necessarily adhere to it if we have evidence for a different reading. This is because Hebrew is generally written in consonants, with the vowels, essential to parsing the words grammatically, often left out. This creates about a million frustrating puzzles for us modern scholars. It is also worth pointing out, as we discuss the evolution of manuscripts and texts, that chapters and verses were introduced into manuscripts and are not original to the texts. Another important set of manuscripts, both because of the text critical value and because of the religious controversy and interest surrounding them, is the text found at Qumran, also called the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls are important to scholars partly because they are significantly older than many of our other pieces of manuscripts. The Dead Sea Scrolls date from the last couple of centuries BCE and the first century or so CE. We do know interesting things about the theology of the Jewish community at Qumran, although there are scholarly disagreements about exactly how we might classify this Qumranic community. Translators and text critics have also worked two different degrees from the 1. Septuagint, an early Greek-Jewish translation of the Bible, called the Septuagint because of a fabulous, fable pun intended story around it, in which the Egyptian king wanted a translation of the wise Hebrew Bible, and 70 Septuagint, translators separately translated the text into the exact same Greek, confirming the supervision and blessing of God over this translation. 2. The Samaritan Pentateuch, the version of the Pentateuch, the Torah, held canonical by the Samaritan communities. 3. The Latin Vulgate, a 4th century CE Latin translation attributed to the church father Jerome. 4. The Targumim, a complicated set of Jewish texts containing and paraphrasing and commenting on the Tanakh. And 5. The Peshitta, the Syriac. Syriac is a Semitic language very closely related to Aramaic, the Syriac Bible used by Syriac-speaking communities. There is much more we could talk about regarding manuscripts of the Hebrew Bible, but the main thing to know is that we do make new discoveries over time and spend a lot of time and energy trying to reconstruct textual history, scribal practices, and scriptural reading and usage. So, moving on to the Greek New Testament. There is a lot of Greek New Testament textual criticism, which I am less familiar with broadly speaking, but in order to understand some of the debates and arguments among scholars and fundamentalists and others, you should know about 1. The Textus Receptus, the version of the Greek New Testament starting with Erasmus, a very important Dutch Christian humanist from the early modern period who both influenced and argued with the Protestant reformers, and 2. The Codex Vaticanus, a Greek manuscript kept by the Vatican, which historically has been under suspicion from select fundamentalists because of Protestant anti-Catholicism. And 3, the Codex Sinaiticus, which is in Greek and was found in the 1800s at the monastery of St. Catherine, Mount Sinai, and largely obtained from the monastery over the course of the 1840s and 1850s. Much of this discussion of manuscripts and texts make up what is called lower criticism, which is this textual criticism that uses a range of Hebrew and Greek texts, as well as Latin, Syriac, Aramaic, and other translations and text fragments to reconstruct the development of texts. Many evangelical and/or fundamentalists are okay with this to different degrees. This is to be contrasted with higher criticism, which is historical criticism, asking questions of sources and authorship. Academic higher criticism largely began in the 1830s in Germany with the New Testament, as well as the Hebrew Bible, with figures like Julius Wellhausen, who is a major historical proponent of the documentary hypothesis, which consists of the argument that the Torah, the Pentateuch, is made up of several sources that were combined. We'll talk about the neo-documentary hypothesis at some point, I'm sure. This practice of higher or historical criticism is essential to the history of American Protestant fundamentalism. It will be repeatedly and directly raised as a problem by many evangelicals and fundamentalists. Higher criticism is at the crux of many interdenominational and other outer denominational debates in the 1800s until now. For instance, we biblical historical critics translate in the context of how ancient Judeans, etc., would have likely intended or understood the text, sometimes eliminating, then, Christological glosses from earlier translations, which we'll talk about. Higher criticism treats biblical texts like literature written by humans in a particular historical and cultural context. Many higher critics are religious Jews or Christians, and have been from the beginning of higher criticism. This isn't religious people versus secular people. However, higher criticism does mean different approaches to what the Bible is and what the Bible does for different religious individuals. And this will be the crux of much of the Protestant drama going forward, explicitly or implicitly. I don't want to end this section without mentioning an important element of earlier higher criticism that likely won't surprise many listeners, but is still worth mentioning. Wellhausen, mentioned before, was anti-Jewish. His version of the documentary hypothesis was teleological, built on the basis of a legalistic decline in Judaic religion that was restored and revived by Jesus into Christianity. This is not only, in my personal and scholarly opinion, inaccurate, but it is also dangerous. The framing of Second Temple Judaism, as well as later Judaism, as legalistic, in contrast to the apparently more spiritual and pure Christianity, is a common anti-Judaism trope that has been effectively re-examined and re-explained by many modern scholars, who point to the evidence of a wide swath of kinds of Judean religion during the Second Temple period and to the Protestant biases of many of these scholars that skew their interpretations. There are versions of the documentary hypothesis or similar theories today, and higher criticism writ large, that do not contain, support, or align with these anti-Jewish ideas. Biblical studies has had a heavy Protestant bias for a long time, and I'm very grateful to the work that many recent biblical scholars have done to make scholarship on the Bible much more accurate and nuanced, which I also endeavor to do. That's it for today. I know this was a very lecture-like podcast. I promise that not all of them will be quite this dense or cover quite this many topics. Let me know if you have any questions, comments, specific things you'd like to learn about, or questions you have on this podcast account on social media, or by emailing me at fruitofknowledgepodcast@gmail.com. Remember, learning is not a sin. Thanks. Have a lovely one.